sure tonight. He had nine. What was it? Well, he had 900 and change, so I know he's over the 1,000-yard rushing mark tonight, and he is their MVP for sure. Kane Donnelly, senior. 6'3", 205 as they're playing jump around. A little late, 1:59 to go, but here they come with a little jump around as the Emory Warriors break huddle, and so do the Somerset Spartans. For a game that doesn't have a heck of a lot of meaning, I suppose, in terms of playoffs and such. It's an electric crowd here, down here in Somerset on their grass field. Brand new track, brand new press box. As Donnelly's got it right side, he's going to scamper and finally gives himself up at about the 1 yard line. And that is a first down. First down, and that's probably going to be the ball game. They are at the 2 yard line, are the Spartans. Ready to punch it in here for a score and enough to win this ball game. They're up by 6, 1:37 and ticking. The Spartans are going to come away with a victory, it looks like, here over the Emory Warriors. So Emory, I'm not going to say it's a rebuild year, because you ask guys like Maxson and Keaton and Wolin and Ellison, seniors, they wanted to win, and they really put a lot of effort into it, as Donnelly, number 13, in for a touchdown. And that'll probably do it, 22-10. 1:12 to go in the ball game. It's only their second victory here, the Spartans, so a lot of celebration going on. I'm not gonna give a time of death yet, because it's not over. 1:12 to go. Stranger things have happened with a 12-point lead, but it would take. Would take the type of miracle that caused the Green Bay Packers to cough up the 2014 NFC Championship, if you know what I mean. They're going for two, the Spartans. Conley has it and rumbles in for the score. So no challenge at all there. Donnelly, I'm going to say it wrong all night, I guess. Kellen Donnelly easily marches in, or Kane Donnelly rather, Kellen, his younger brother, easily marches in for the score, and that's going to probably put it out of reach, no question. 1:12 to go in the ball game, 24-10. The home team is playing the home Spartan war cry song. I made that up. I have no idea what it's called. But it is their school song, and they are fired up. The dance team's got them rolling. The band has got them rolling. And Emory is going to end the season with two victories, it appears. Two conference victories. St. Croix Central last week. And Altoona back in September. Here comes the kick. It's a squibber. It's going to be taken by Wolin. Keaton Wolin, he's hit immediately. Number 17, initial contact. That's Reese Anderson. First and 10, 33-yard line for the Emory Warriors. 1:08 to go in the ball game. Thanks again for joining us here, Emory Warrior football. This will be our final broadcast unless the sky opens up and a miracle happens here. Of Emory Warrior football for the season. Thanks for joining us throughout the season right here on 107.5 WLAK. Handoff up the middle, nothing there. Keaton Wolin, I believe the ball carrier, and boy, taken down, yes. No, it was Vontae Allen, the ball carrier, and he's taken down with some attitude by, I believe, 36 as he comes off. 35-yard line, second and 8. No, it was number 38, and he comes off gimping a little bit. That is Cooper Kuhn. And here we go, second and eight, handoff. Left side, that is Keaton Wallen, and he is, no, it's not Keaton Wallen. It is Vontae Allen again. Bigger gain this time, left side. It's going to be about 7 yards, third and three. 40-yard line. And this one is almost over, 26 seconds left. 24-10, the Spartans going to come away with a victory. To the delight of the home crowd, handoff, Allen, right side, first down. Clock's going to continue to tick when they spot the ball. First down, 49-yard line, no, 44-yard line. 20 seconds, and we're going to run out of time, the Amory Warriors. They might get off one more play, or the coach might say, let it run down. We don't need any injuries. And that is going to be the ball game. So the Amory Warriors travel down to Somerset, needing a victory to possibly get into the playoffs, and they don't get it. The Spartans put a cap on this one, 24-10, down here in Somerset. So thanks for joining us again on 107.5 WLAK. It's been a pleasure being with you. My name is Jay Cornell. Looking forward to seeing you again on the radio. Have a good night, everybody. Signing off here from Spartan Country, the Somerset Spartans 24, the Amory Warriors 10.
Amory Warrior High School Football on 107.5 WLAK. Brought to you by Vans Electric Blue Flame Heating and Cooling, by Northwest Communications, and by Eric Morrissey, Edward D. Jones. Amory Warrior High School Football on 107.5 WLAK.
To them is important. Do I believe there's a lot of them? I don't think so. I think at this point we're in our camps, and as Andrea points out, we are divided. But I wish we weren't. And this is where I'm attempting to be aspirational. I'm attempting to say, you know, good policy ideas, a good direction to make lives better, if that's what we want, might be what we get. I'm not naive enough to believe that, you know, give the people what they want. If they want something better, you're going to get better. I understand the media mentality of Trump is a gold mine of train wreck politic. But the fact that he wasn't voted down soundly speaks volumes of us as the collective. Not you as the individual, as part of us. As a nation, what the world sees is us, the United States of America, unfortunately divided, unfortunately pitted against each other. And the weird thing is I do believe red hat, blue hat, yellow hat, pink hat, I believe we all want basically the same thing. Good jobs, safe neighborhoods, excellent educational opportunity, quality health care, all of those things I believe we want. The question is, how do we get there? And is our hatred of others and our hatred of ourselves, is that standing in our way? So that was where my intention had gone. And when I have someone telling me that you be more discerning and thoughtful in your words, my response to that is, if my words upset you to the point that you're going to lash out at me, how about, here's an idea. Use that anger, use that energy to go get people out to vote, to ensure that we don't have a nightmare for 4 years, to ensure that the bad policies that we've been talking about because of Project 2025, because of the things that Trump did in office, maybe we take that energy and use it in a positive direction instead of dividing us, who I think, I would argue, probably not too far apart on the ideas, the thoughts, the hopes, and the dreams for this country. That'd be my thought, my hope. But I do want to hear yours. Am I off base? Should I apologize? Am I wrong? Could be. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Kevin Moore is going to be here, Teamsters head from Michigan, to talk about what he's working on in their state. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Teamsters President Sean O'Brien's getting a lot of attention since his appearance. Well, I guess since the January thumbs up, since the RNC speech, but really a lot since his appearance on a right-wing podcast claiming that Democrats have effed him. Screwed them over, cheated, however you want to take that. And you look at one state that where you could clearly refute the claim that the Democrats have screwed you over, and it's Michigan. You know, one of the blue wall states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, states where Teamsters have an outweighed presence, a strong presence, a united presence, and one that could move the state one way or another. But Michigan's a state where Democrats have done the right thing. When they got control of the state house, the Senate, and the governor's mansion, they repealed right to work for less. They moved on prevailing wage. They moved on a bunch of labor priorities and doing what Democrats do when they've got power. And that's why I've asked Kevin Moore to come talk with us. Kevin is the president of Teamsters Local 299 in Detroit and president of the Michigan Teamsters Joint Council 43. Kevin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, good evening. Glad to be here.
So let's start with Michigan because, you know, we saw what Republicans have done over the years. 2012, I was in Michigan when they passed the whole no rights at work agenda with lame duck votes. We saw what Republicans did then. And, you know, recently we've seen what Democrats have done. There's a record here that I think you could be sharing with your members.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no comparison. We lived at 12 years, actually 38 years Republican control of Michigan, 12 years of right to work, trying to destroy and diminish unions to break the back of middle class people, because we all know that the unions uphold the non-union people to get a fair wage and a fair pay. Without us, they completely crush these people. And so we lived that nightmare. And the first time that we got the House, the Senate, and the Governor Gretchen Whitmer in office, within 90 days, the House of Labor stood together and repealed the right to work, that anti-union legislation that tried to kill us in the first 90 days. And then we went on to pass the largest infrastructure bill in the first 8 months, putting thousands of people to work, unionized work, fixing our roads and bridges that were destroyed for like 27 years. They never put money into roads and bridges. And we were already, bridges were collapsing. It was just decimated here. As you see, if you come through town now, there's orange cones everywhere because roads and bridges were destroyed across this state. We have done things for schools and for our church. Our teachers are educating our children. They are educating the next president of the United States, not just lunatic Donald Trump. But they're educating our children. Also that we help push and promote that no child should go hungry. No child should come to school because they don't have a meal, and it hurts their learning curve. So together, all of union and Michigan, that's why I'm proud of all of labor together, as band together. We've seen 38 and 12 years of destruction for our Republican Party. And I don't know who's saying that the Republicans, I mean, Democrats ever screwed us. The Democrats are the only ones in Michigan. Now, I've lived here my entire life. My grandfather and father worked along with James R. Hoffa. That's all I've ever been as a 299 member. And I know what the Democrats do in Michigan. And that's why we built the blue wall around the state. And we're sure to how not let a guy like that.
Yeah, like Donald Trump take that over. So let me ask you this, because, clearly as the president of 299 and joint counsel 43 there, and as part of the blue wall, it's the education process of your members that's so important. What are you telling them right now?
Well, we're seeing that in Michigan, with all the unions together and all the teams for local unions, we're with our members on a weekly and daily basis, on the phones with them, in the shops. They know us personally, as friends. So we're always having debates. Now, yes, let me just be straight clear here, because I'm not like Donald Trump telling you a story. You know, there's 28% of the people in Michigan that support Republican Donald Trump, right? But as long as they got 28 and I got 72, I like my math.
Right.
And our people turn out to vote. The Teamsters of Michigan turn out about a 79% turnout and vote. So we will get to the polls. We will vote. My wife's a UAW 38-year worker, so she understands the, and I have two young grandchildren, a boy that's 6 weeks old, a granddaughter that's 2.5 years old.
Congratulations.
We gotta leave a society that's lovable, caring, compassionate, not maligning everybody and putting everybody down that don't agree with your opinion. You're a Teamster. We can have a philosophical indifference. That doesn't mean we got to hate each other.
I'm 100% in agreement with you. But, on this issue, you see the International has failed to endorse, which is one of the things that I've said this before, and the audience knows it. It's one of the things I love about the Teamsters Union. It's a bottom-up union. There's no top-down kind of scenario here. So the locals and the joint councils have gone and made their endorsements. Your joint council came out on September 24th and endorsed the Harris Walls ticket. Was that hard to do? Was it contentious? Because, I've heard some stories. What'd you get?
No, not at all. I mean, I go all the way back to James R. Hoffa, since a little boy. The national endorsement comes from the chair of the general president. And Sean O'Brien is the general president. So we stayed pat until Sean O'Brien made his decision, because it's rightfully his decision to make. And when he went neutral in Michigan, we don't know neutral. We're not going back. We're not living 12 years in the past and getting decimated in Michigan. So every union together, House of Labor, together, pushing forward to make sure that we do not go back to all this hatred, visceral.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel, Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice.
Dive into some,
and now, here's your host.
Politic here. One of the problems that I had with Sean O'Brien speaking at the RNC was that it normalized just how bad the Trump years were. And you lived through it. I lived through it. I know teachers across
the
country.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel, Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host.
Anti-union. Can you walk me through what that was like?
Well, it was a nightmare. And just look what he did, giving tax incentives to the companies to ship our jobs overseas. We lost 10,000 jobs right out the gate with Donald Trump incentivizing corporations to take our jobs out of Michigan overseas. So when you start doing manufacturing and transportation and warehousing and travel, our state is a very diverse state. And so every chip you send overseas, there's 10 or 15 more jobs lost. He doesn't care. It's all about getting paid and decimating people. We went through COVID, all the way through COVID. The guy said it was a Chinese flu. Then he said drink bleach. It was a nationwide disaster. People were dying, and he faced to realize and faced to look at it. Because
welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel, Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host,
trying to destroy middle class jobs. He wants to destroy unions because then he knows that he owns us.
Exactly. And that's my point exactly. So are you, is that the message to your members? Or are you also saying, look, you know, Joe Biden has been the most pro-labor president of my lifetime. I can say that without question. You know, his NLRB appointments have been fantastic. The Department of Labor has been fantastic. The Federal Trade Commission, the trade representatives, all down the list, the people who are in Biden's cabinet and administration are decidedly on the side of working people. So for me, it's not just about Joe Biden and ultimately now Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, but it's about the whole slew that comes along with it compared to what we saw under Donald Trump, which were all corporate lawyers and anti-union acts.
Everything they can do to break the back of middle-class people. They say they care about middle-class people. They don't give a damn about middle-class people. We forget about this, and I don't know if your pension fund in the East was in bad shape, and the Central States pension, where I come from, was ready to go defunct. And every president under the old administration, the Hoffa administration, from president after president, we asked for us to get some relief. Because it's not a entitlement. It's 30 and 40 years of hard work. And everybody stubbed their nose at us, hoping that, and especially Donald Trump, because he knew it would just break their back and put them in, make them broken poor. And the only person who brought it before us was Joe Biden. But everybody forgets that Kamala Harris was the woman that walked into the Senate, walked up to that podium and hit that gavel and saved over 4 million people's pensions. That's the retirement of long and hard work. And people forget that, right? And even some of my own members, which I don't understand it, right? They're short-sightedness, yeah. Right? They have a 37-year pension. It was inches away from being ripped without underneath your feet. And this woman gets up and bangs the gavel and saves your retirement so you could have Social Security and your pension. And it's like today, it's like, oh, well. I just don't understand it.
No, the reality is, you know, my grandfather retired with a Central States pension, lived his life with the dignity of having a pension. My grandmother was a UFCW member in Cleveland, retired with the dignity of a secure union pension. And I want that for friends of mine who I know when I worked in Cleveland and local 407, that they're going to retire and have that pension. And it's Joe Biden who did it. There's all the talk. There's all the words. There's all the tweets. But the actions, I don't care if Joe Biden can deliver a line, he delivered the pensions.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And, you know, Joe Biden said it right to our face. He said, I promise you, I was in the room when he said, I apologize, I wasn't the commander-in-chief when President Obama promised we'd get the pension fixed. They went to affordable health care first. Then we lost control of the Congress, and we never got back to the pension. But Joe Biden never forgot that. And neither is Kamala Harris, because she sure the hell went up there and decided to vote, or we wouldn't be sitting here talking about my Central States pension.
So let me change the conversation here a bit, because we know how bad Donald Trump was. We lived through those 4 years. How good is Kamala Harris and Tim Walz going to be? I got to tell you, I love Tim Walz. I love everything about the guy. A guy who, you know, was a track coach to pay off school lunch debt and then became governor and ended, you know, gave everybody school lunches. That's the kind of leader I want. That's the kind of person that I want. And I think Kamala Harris taking on big corporations while she was attorney general in California gives me hope that there's somebody going to be fighting for the little guy, that being me.
Now, she's got the moxie, and so does he. I mean, he's a military vet like my whole family. You know, he went in and served 24 years, put the uniform on. That's commendable. Kamala Harris has been fighting transnational gangs and drug dealers. And they talk about the border. Here's a beautiful thing. They talk about the border. She's been prosecuting people for her whole career for the border issues. Donald Trump says that he was going to fix the wall his first term. You know what he did? He built 500 miles of wall and turned his back and walked away, right? There was negotiated the best bipartisan, and I wish Donald Trump could listen to this. Maybe he's smart enough to listen to this program, that it was a bipartisan bill passed to secure the borders, put more agents on there, bring screening to stop the fentanyl. And that selfish little no good dog called his little right wing puppies and they pulled the bill from the floor. So you want to talk about border. Kamala Harris will not only defend and pass a bill to pass the border, she's going to make sure that our children have clean water, clean air. I mean, the Gen Z kids do pay attention to this, right? They want water and air to drink. They want affordable housing. And so this is not just for men like you and I that fought our whole life. We got to take care of the younger men and women that are coming behind us.
No, I say right? All the time, Kevin, you know, I want to leave something for my children worth inheriting. I don't want to leave them nothing but chaos. And right now is that moment where we have to stand up and fight for something better. Because here's the thing, you know, I look at Trump and Michigan, you know, I'm sure this is the same kind of dog whistle that we get here where I live in Pennsylvania, wherever they say Philadelphia, there's some code to that. But I'm sure you saw the quote of Donald Trump saying, well, if you want the entire country to look like Detroit, you know, vote for Kamala Harris.
Well, if anybody spent the last 2 hours or 3 hours or 2 days in Detroit, you would see that we're light years away from where you were 15 years ago when he's talking his garbage. Detroit is a vibrant community with more restaurants and hotels and businesses thriving up. You know, African-American, Latino, white, black businesses starting up in Detroit. I mean, this is a vibrant town. And we finally got a football team. So don't listen to Donald Trump's rhetoric. But how do you come to Detroit? And you've been doing this a long time. You've got a lot of common sense. How do you come to a city and stand with Chamber of Commerce and put down and malign the city and the people, which means the African-American base, the Latino base, the Arab base, white base? You put us all down like we're living in a bunch of murdering, thugging city, and then expect them to vote for you. I mean, the guy's a delusional, deranged human being.
So I'm assuming that this is the conversation you're having at the workplace gates and in the parking lots and in the meetings that you guys are holding with members, because ultimately what unions do is educate, inoculate, and mobilize. So, you know, are you telling me you're out there doing that and making sure that Michigan doesn't go crazy this time around?
Yes, sir, I am. And all you got to do is take a little peek at my Facebook page and see my membership meeting together with a multicultural membership I have. And I took it right to them. Out of love and respect that they need to, you know, do what they need to do for their family, this state, and yourself. So take a look at my Facebook page. You'll see just a snippet of it. So I don't bring it soft and kind. I bring it real and out of love and respect for our members who work each and every day. They get up, they put their pants and shoes on. They go to work each and every day. They work through the entire COVID. I lost hundreds of people in COVID. They never missed a beat. So our members like it to be real. They don't like this warm and fuzzy stuff. They want to be actually debated, and we don't destroy each other. We have healthy debate. Debate is good with anybody.
There you go.
If you believe the one authoritative dictator, and the only way you're going to get him to like you is, you know, tell him how pretty his hair looks or how nice his hotel with his Donald Trump sign says. I don't need a person like that running. He should never be behind an Oval Office desk again in his life. And pack up J.D. Vance and take him back to wherever he goes.
I was going to ask you that. I want to finish up there because you're next to Ohio. You're right there next to Vance country. And I look at someone like Tim Walz, who I like a lot, and I compare him to someone like J.D. Vance, who I'm not overly thrilled with. This has got to be fertile ground for comparison for working people to go, hey, look, which way you going here? Which side are you on?
Yeah, I mean, there's a moral, rational side and just a lunacy and a bunch of anger side. I mean, J.D. Vance, he's a highly educated guy. Don't get me wrong. He's a spin doctor machine, right? That's why Donald Trump loves him, because he can just spin it. You know, he keeps telling everybody he's from Appalachia. He was born in Ohio. I don't know if he knows geography or not, but it's not in Kentucky. It's in Ohio. His grandmother lived in Appalachia. But he sells this big thing, I'm from Appalachia, with all the opioid addiction. Why don't you get off your ass to do something about opioid addiction? The guy is just a bold-faced liar,
good.
And then he gets up there and tells our women they're childish cat ladies. And then the two of them lunatics say that people in Springfield, Ohio, are eating cats and dogs. And our society is actually buying into this.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is where my problem is, and this is where we can end this. I listened to Donald Trump and Elon Musk wax poetic about firing striking workers. And
amen. What the hell is he doing?
Should have been the red line. Should have been, that's it. Every union member in this country should have said, that's the end of it. No possible way we can support that, because the right to strike is the bedrock of everything that we hold dear in fighting for better wages, hours, and conditions.
Yes, sir, it is.
But Kevin Moore, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Keep up the great work. Get out there. Keep knocking on those doors and preaching the good word.
Thanks for having me. Keep doing what you're doing.
Appreciate it. Kevin Moore, president of Teamsters Local 299, also president of the Teamsters Joint Council 43 out there in Michigan. Want to hear your thoughts. Do you think that should be the red line? Should it have been that moment where labor collectively said, oh, hell no. You're not taking our right to strike. You're not going to praise someone for firing striking workers. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the low 50s. For tomorrow, a gradual clearing and cooler, highs mid-70s. Sunny, warmer, and upper 70s on Sunday. Temps stay above average to start next week, as highs stay in the 70s. It's 63 right now.
Need reliable electrician services? Look no further than Vans Electric. They've got the experts ready to help with wiring, lighting, and even full electrical installation. Their expertise doesn't stop there. Thanks to their partnership with Blue Flame Heating and Cooling, all your heating and air conditioning needs can also be met. Together, they're your one-stop shop for keeping your home powered, comfortable, and safe. Call Vans Electric at Blue Flame Heating and Cooling at 715-268-2264 today.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I love the stories that are coming out of our corporate-controlled mainstream media, like Politico or The Hill, some of those rags, talking about, you know, how do union members feel this election cycle? And look, my union, the Teamsters Union, has given them a lot of fodder, a lot of fertile ground to create division. And I thought, maybe we should talk to somebody who's literally on the ground, knocking on doors, pressing the flesh, you know, kissing babies, doing all of that stuff. That's why I've asked Diane Roy Smith to come talk with us. She's a member of AFSCME Local 1981 in Harrisburg, District Council 13. She works for the state of Pennsylvania, but on her free time, out there knocking on the doors. And like I said, shaking hands and kissing babies. Diane, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, you know, we see this narrative being played out in the media that there's this great divide, that, you know, labor is split down the middle, and, you know, that Trump's got a shot of getting labor support, and, you know, because they need to create this horse race. So I figured, you know, I ask somebody who's out there knocking on the doors, what are you finding?
I'm finding that the doors that I've been knocking on are very strong Harris supporters. And they're concerned about their pensions, for example, there was a gentleman that I was talking to. He was concerned about his overtime. And he called me and he was complaining that he wasn't getting enough overtime, and his family, you know, relies on that income to come in. And I explained to him, I said, you realize you're a strong supporter of Trump. If you go that direction, you'll never see a dime of overtime, because he doesn't like overtime. So he just so happened to see a clip where Trump did say that. And then I told him also, you need to read Project 2025 and understand what it means and what he's planning to do going forward.
Yeah.
So he comes back to me later on and he says, you know, you're right. This is going to affect us, and it's going to affect us deeply. So if I want to maintain that additional income to put my kids through school or anything like that, then I do need to vote and for a person that's going to help me do that.
And look, as a union member, Diane, the reality is if you've read Project 2025, I would argue one of the, maybe not the final blow, but one of the final blows to collective bargaining and the ability of workers to form and join unions for better wages, hours, conditions. And look, they're very honest about it. They're open about it. And it's right there in writing for every union member to see. So for me, the reality of a union member voting for Trump and ultimately Project 2025 is kind of insane.
It is. It truly is, because I know for myself, I'm planning to retire probably in the next 2 years. And I have several other coworkers that are planning to retire as well. One of our major concerns is our pension. And like, are we going to get paid for all the years that we put in with our union paid job? Are we going to be able to retire and go on our vacations and just do crazy stuff that retirees do?
Or not eat cat food.
Exactly. Yes. Or be able to buy just an egg just to see what that tastes like.
But this is the reality of that I think a lot of people, because sadly we're in an environment where a lot of workers, thanks to Reagan era policies, thanks to trickle down economics, thanks to the business roundtable destroying defined benefit pensions and giving us these wonderful defined contribution plans that were supposed to make us all millionaires. We've got a pension crisis. So people who, like you, deferred compensation for years of work to put into a pension fund to ensure your older years, you damn well want that. And you should be making the argument that, we contributed to it. It's ours. We should be getting it. But I look at someone like Trump, who had a chance during his presidency to backstop union pensions in the multi-employer system and refused to. It was Joe Biden who actually did it.
That's correct. And besides that, what would Trump know how to live on one paycheck for a four family household? What would he know? He never had to go out and get a loan to pay for this or pay for that or work two or three jobs. It was given to him. So what would he know about the working person?
So when you're out on the doors and you're talking to people, because look, I've had some union members tell me, Donald Trump's giving up, millions of dollars to be president, and that's why I'm voting for him, because he's sacrificing. What do you say to someone who throws that out at you?
The millions of dollars, if he had millions of dollars, one, he wouldn't be running for president. If he had billions of dollars, he wouldn't be running for president. What he does is he plays the tomfoolery thing of, hey, I might be getting indicted, so I'm going to need some funding to get me out of jail. So that person that says, hey, I heard this on, it was someone who was on the news and they were talking about it, and I like how they broke it down. That person who's complaining about the cost of food, they will spend their last dime, spend everything in their savings to make sure Donald Trump does not go to jail or make sure Donald Trump has whatever he needs to get out of trouble. And then they complain about how much everything costs. Had they had saved that money and went for a candidate that's not trying to gouge them at their pocket, they will be able to buy whatever they need and go forth on and do things that they needed in their life.
Yeah, well, look, the tax cuts that he's talking about will be a giant inflation bomb. Give out the kind of money that he's talking about, and it's going to create the kind of inflation that they claim is happening. And for the reason it's happening right now, I've argued from the start of this inflation that it's mostly corporate greed. It's the fact that you're still willing to buy it and they're still willing to gouge you out of it. And if it weren't, if you weren't still buying it, the prices wouldn't still be high. So maybe inflation isn't high enough because we're still buying their stuff. But the line that I thought interesting is, if Trump's a billionaire, why does he need my $3?
Exactly. Why does he need my money? Why does he, when he's in trouble, why can't he just go to his account, write a check? I wouldn't trust his checks, but why doesn't he just go to his account and transfer the cash to pay it off? He's constantly asking for more money and more money, even down to the wall. I hear people, when I go to door to door, talk about, oh, he's going to get that wall built this time. And I'm like, don't you recall the last time he said that he was going to attempt or try to build that wall? He took that money and he put it in his pocket, and his buddy went to jail for it.
Yeah.
So,
and Mexico was going to pay for it. Yeah. One of the things I'm also hearing, and this is concerning to me because it's the narrative that's out there, is that union members in particular aren't excited about this election season. That voters, the Democratic voters as a whole, they're not as excited as they should be or could be. Or what are you finding when you're talking to people? Do you get a sense of that people understand that this is really an important election for democracy's sake, for the future of the country's sake? You know, what are you experiencing?
I would say a lot of people are getting it and they understand the importance of it. And then you have that small group that are not getting it and don't understand the importance of it and feel like if the color of her skin is going to be in the office, we don't want that. They're voting on basically what I call vanity. They're not voting on things that will help their future children, their grandchildren, and life in general. Just like you said earlier, like came from the Ronald Reagan era. Back then I was a young teeny bopper, and here that effect from that presidency is rolled into this presidency now. So if we stay on that road and go back, we will never ever get ahead.
Yeah. No, the reality is you know, there's a couple of things. I'm not just voting for Kamala Harris. I'm voting for all of the people that she's going to bring with her, much like I didn't just vote for Joe Biden. Joe Biden was not my first choice, but I voted for all of the people that Joe Biden brought with him. You think of Lina Khan at the Federal Trade Commission. You think of Julie Sue at the Department of Labor. You think of Jonathan Cantor at the Justice Department. You think of Jennifer Abruzzo at the National Labor Relations Board. And this is the one that I tell union members the most. You guys aren't under the National Labor Relations Act, and I get that. But, you know, Trump's NLRB general counsel was a guy who was instrumental in firing the Patco workers back during the Reagan years in 81. So somehow he's been, you know, screwing workers over for decades, whereas Jennifer Abruzzo has done an amazing job of reviving organizing and bringing back some of the old school rules that helped people organize like my grandparents' generation did, much easier, much faster, and getting people the ability to fight for those better wages, hours, conditions. So for me, it's just not Kamala Harris against Donald Trump. It's about that whole platform underneath them. And we know Trump is all corporate, all big business, all very wealthy people, their interests. And Biden has showed us, Harris has shown us, it's all about we the people.
Exactly. It's not about us. Because sometimes when I talk to those who are strong supporters of Trump, I'm like, did they miss civics class? Didn't they get it that it starts from the top and all the way down? You have to make sure when you're voting for your local, your state, and your federal. Just like you file your taxes, you need to file your ballot in the box for all three that are supporting you and your rights and what you are asking for or need to live.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it's amazing to me that, you know, in this day and age, especially after 4 years of witnessing what Trump did to organized labor, and maybe this is the fault of organized labor for not educating their members enough during that period, but all of the horrible decisions that came out during his tenure, the fact that he appointed the people to the Supreme Court, nominated the people to the Supreme Court, who gave us Janus, who made the entire country a no rights at work environment for public sector workers. That to me that should be a disqualifier right from the start. I mean, if I'm you, I'm an AFSCME member, and I'm knocking on an AFSCME member's door. I'm going, Janus, man, made us weaker, took money out of our ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. This should be a non-starter, should be end of conversation.
Well, a lot of the people that we knock on doors are new members. They're brand new. They're just getting into the workforce and don't understand what is a union and what we can do for you. And sometimes I have to go back in my history and explain to them. When I started out, I didn't understand either. But my mother explained to me that being in a union, it helps you be able to, if you need off. When my kid was sick, I was able to take off. These are things that it's like even our raises. We're guaranteed these raises over a four-year period. And these are things that we negotiate for our members. Yep. And this is what dictates our contract for the state.
Yeah, no, look, there's a whole bunch of reasons. The end of at-will employment being the one of the biggest. You can only be fired for just cause. And this idea, you can never fire a union member, is nonsense. You just have to do it the right way. Do we want that kind of a system with our criminal justice system? People are just able to pick you up off the street and go, you're going to jail. No hearings, no lawyers, no trial, no, just to jail. The answer is no, nobody wants that. So for me, you can fire a union member. You just have to do it the right way.
Exactly. And if it was left up to the people who are saying that they're anti-union and don't agree with the union, if they're those are the ones that usually get into situations where they're unable to get out and they come to us and then they understand and realize, maybe I was wrong. Maybe this is for me. And then that's how those are some of the people that we have to deal with on regular basis.
No, bottom line, simple bottom line. And for me, this is when I was doing organizing, this is what I used to say. You know, the company that you work for, the CEO has a contract. Why don't you?
Exactly. And I say something similar to that. You should have a contract. If you're an NFL player, they negotiate their contracts. Why can't we? And negotiating their contracts, they get everything they need, then why can't we do the same?
I am right there with you. Diane, I appreciate the work that you're doing. I don't want to keep you any longer from getting out on those doors and shaking hands and kissing babies and doing all that stuff. Give me one ray of hope. Give me a story that's going to give me hope that come November, we're heading in the right direction.
Oh, there's so many stories. One of my stories is I've come across this a lot, is white males, fathers who are concerned about their daughters' rights, having babies. And if they cannot conceive on their own, they want their daughters to have that option that they can go to alternative measures to conceive babies. If their daughter's life is in danger, or they have that right to do alternative measures to possibly, if they have to, abort the baby. When Trump said that after the ninth month, we'll decide what we'll do, I asked a Republican person, and I said, well, if the baby's healthy and the baby is born and it's in the world, what are you going to do? Are you going to step up and take that baby home with you? And the guy couldn't answer. He gave me a Trump spinneroo.
Yeah.
And I said, I kept asking him, and he couldn't answer. And then finally he said, I guess I can take the baby home. And so that means that what are we going to do with all these children that don't have a place?
But no, the one that gets me is they believe that, you know, I was just telling my wife's in the Harrisburg Hospital right now, and the last time we were there, she was giving birth to our son. And I was telling my mother-in-law, you know, the story of getting there. My wife woke me up at midnight. We were at Harrisburg Hospital having the baby by 1:15. And that's a trek. And I said, so if I understand Trump right, at 1:13, the doctor, before the birth happens, the doctor looked up and said, which way are we going with this? And we could have aborted right there. And because that's what they want us to believe. That, you know,
exactly.
You can flip a coin right, you know, right then, you know, or right after, you know, you got that 5-minute rule. which is just insane. Now, look, personally, I'm not for or against abortion. I'm pro-safety. I want my daughters to be safe. I want them to come home. And I don't want them to have to do what my mother's, their grandmother's generation had to endure, which were friends who had botched abortions and ended up dying because they could get no care, because then it would have been revealed they had it. So for me, I am 100% pro-safety. It should be safe and legal, and this should be, as you pointed out, an extremely important issue to old white guys like me.
Yeah.
There you go. Diane, really great talking with you. I appreciate the time. Great stuff.
All righty. Thank you.
Diane Roy Smith, member of AFSCME Local 1981, District Council 13 here in Pennsylvania. I want to hear your thoughts. Something she said resonate? Are my union brothers and sisters out there going, nodding their head along like I was? Because I don't think there's the divide that they're pitching to us. But email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was the day that Paul Robeson received the Spingarn Medal from the NAACP. The award was given annually to the African American with the highest achievement. Robeson certainly fit that criteria. He was born in Princeton, New Jersey. He attended Rutgers University, where he was an athletic standout and valedictorian. He earned his law degree from Columbia. He was a successful singer, as well as stage and film actor. He was also an internationally recognized star, with singing engagements all around the world. Robeson strongly supported labor and working people. He was also an outspoken critic of U.S. colonialism. His stand for social justice made him a target of Senator Joe McCarthy during the hysteria of the Cold War Red Scare. Because of his alleged communist ties, in 1950, Robeson's passport was revoked. It took him 8 years to get it reissued. During that time, he could not travel abroad to perform. The International Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers invited Robeson to sing at their Canadian convention in 1952. Since he could not travel, he sang over the telephone. The union then organized a concert on the Washington State Canadian border. Standing on a flatbed truck parked on the U.S. side of the border, Robeson gave a 45-minute performance to a crowd of 40,000 people. He started the concert by saying, quote, "I stand here today under great stress because I dare, as do you, all of you, to fight for peace and for a decent life for all men, women, and children." Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
What does he care if the world's got troubles? What does he care if the land ain't free?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I just got to tell you, I'm happy to hear from Diane that out on the doors, talking to actual people, not what we're getting from the mainstream media, not what we're getting shoved down our throat, but from people who are actually out there, you know, doing the work. You know, the people who are actually seeing people face to face, that it's not the doom and gloom that, because understand, you know, bad news sells. If it bleeds, it leads. That's where we are. It's pretty simple. Real quick quiz. What do Boeing, T-Mobile, Tesla, Amazon, Walmart, Bank of America, and ExxonMobil all have in common? I'm not going to wait too long. None of them paid anywhere near the minimum 21% corporate tax rate for the first 5 years of the Trump tax scam. In fact, I guess the other question is, what do Boeing, T-Mobile, and Tesla all have in common? Well, they all got tax refunds. They got refunds. Now, these are companies that are billions of dollars in revenue. Billions! A whole lot more than the $40,000 or $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000 that the average person makes in this country. They got a refund. And most people I know who work for a living got very little. And this is one of those things where you go, Which side are you on? You on the side of corporate America, who's making, you know, money hand over fist, but with legions of corporate lawyers and tax attorneys and tax avoidance lawyers out there looking for every loophole and lobbying for every loophole, and, oh, by the way, getting a president elected to give them more loopholes and lower their tax rate even further? Or do we want to have a fair, sane, rational tax code that benefits us? Understand, taxes, price of admission into the country. You want to be part of the society, you got to pay to get in. That simple. And you go back to the good old days of the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, you know, 56% was the corporate tax rate. Choke on that for a second, corporate America. And understand, they've done a masterful job over these, you know, 70 years in getting us to believe that, no, no, we can't tax corporate America. No, no, can't do that. Here's also something, question. Would you take an endorsement from a Klan member? Well, David Duke is back in the news again. David Duke, the former Klan member, former anti-Semitic white supremacist. Well, he has come out and he has endorsed Jill Stein. I didn't know he had a radio show, but, you know, he's carefully considered what's good for white people, for Europeans. And he's decided. Jill Stein. You got to think, you know, she's not thrilled. Seriously, you got to think, not happy. You got to think, no. He backed up his statement by saying Stein is one of the most important statements that I have ever made politically. That's who he's backing. You wish these people would just go away. At least I would. It's that simple. Want to finish up today with an email, and you know, one of my favorite kind of emails. Rick listening to Tuesday's program about Made in America. He says, quote, "We recently remodeled our kitchen and we were able to source most made in the U.S. cabinets, craft made, made in Ohio, countertops, Corin, U.S., stove, Viking U.S., oven, dishwasher, mini fridge, KitchenAid U.S., floor, Pergo U.S., wiring U.S., drywall U.S., the lighting, not U.S. He claims very hard to find. The refrigerator, not made in the U.S. So we did spend some time getting U.S.-made items, 90% made in the U.S. And look, this is one of those things where you unfortunately have to really go and look for this stuff. And, you know, the fact that Joe Biden as president, you know, put someone in charge of Made in the U.S., and I know her really well, and, you know, she used to be on this program all the time. Celeste Drake is doing an amazing job in the Made in the USA office. The fact that there is someone who's doing that is going to make it a little bit easier for Rick and for future people who want to remodel or do things. I know who's not doing that. Because, you know, I look at Trump's record and his record's not good. Not good. From the ties that he sold, to the water that he sold, to the steaks that were questionable, on down the list, to recently the Bibles with the founding documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution in the Bible, which, you know, we can argue whether that's sane. But that, at $60 a pop, printed in China and cost about $3. So you go, well, where's the rest of that money go? You know where it goes. It goes into Trump's pocket, of which he works really, really hard. And his lawyers work really, really hard not to pay taxes on. So there you go. I don't have time for more emails, but thanks to everyone who sent emails. We will get to some next time. Thank you to everyone who has sent my wife good wishes and thoughts and prayers and vibes and well meanings and all of that. If you want to send something, Carol Smith, P.O. Box 1026, Carlisle, Pennsylvania, 1713. I do read all emails, all correspondence to her, and thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.